I now have the high chair. What I want to mention beforehand, in Australia, we have every year we produce a DVD, an audio DVD, in which we put all the sermons of the year. Now, we had a little bit excited we got, and we got excess stock. So I've brought some excess stock. I'm going to leave it here. So if anybody would like to take one or two or three, help yourselves. I'll put them over here. It is a DVD of all the sermons that we received in 2010. Now, let's see. It plays on a DVD player or your computer, but not your MP3 player. This week we've been talking a little bit in jest about Irish wit and about Blarney, the wit of the Irish. I'm going to start off with a little story today. It's an interesting little story about a building site and an advert that went out for a handyman. And what happened was a chap came over, and my voice is going to have to change now to give you the spirit of what was going on. Anyway, he presented himself, and the building supervisor said, "Grand, okay, over there, help them with the bricks." Oh, he said, "I don't do bricks." "Okay, no problem. Over there, with the gyprock, help them with the gyprock." "Oh, I don't do gyprocking." "Okay, the paint, help them with the paint." "And over, I don't do paint." Well, the supervisor looked at him, and he said, "What is handy about you?" Well, the guy looked up and he says, "I just live down the corner." You know, we laugh. It's a little bit of a misunderstanding. It's based on a misunderstanding and we laugh. But it really is laughable, misunderstandings and failing to meet one another is really laughable. And the problem is we don't laugh. We get serious. I had a situation back at work, involved in catering and motel and so on. And we had a chap, I still remember his name, and I can say his name because he won't hear this. John Newman was his name. And this guy here, I am telling you, wanted 5-star service at a 3-star price. And the cook, I got them together with the cook, and I don't know how it happened, but they talked, right? They worked out the menu. And I caught the cook on Sunday preparing heated up vegetables for the buffet. And I said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Well, that's what he wanted." I said, no, he didn't. This guy wants the lot. He wants good stuff. Anyway, so I made the mistake of bringing them together. And it was an argument. You know, the cook was saying, "You're calling me a liar." I got like that. And I had to separate them. How did that happen? I mean, how can you misunderstand? I still remember to this day. So the point is, miscommunications, really, when we think about it, are laughable. But we get serious, right? Let's have a look at Daniel 2:44. That's our first scripture. 2:44, for those that are really looking up, it's page 852 in the Bible. I really have a fantastic time looking up the Bible here because I've got my pages already marked out. "And in the days of these kings, the God of heaven shall set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break in pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and it shall stand forever." We talked about the vastness of the universe in the past few days. How incredible it is, and how there's not one astronomer amongst them that doesn't believe that there has to be a great God. And there's a purpose for all that. Now, do you suppose that if you and I, if we do not learn the lesson of how to get along, we're going to be there? It's a lesson that we're going to have to learn. You know, I wonder how many are there that can't face someone. I just don't want to go there because I don't want to talk to this guy or this woman. How many are there? You know, I had a situation years back myself where I employed someone, oh boy, what a recipe for disaster in the church, you know. And we, you know, it was a real tangled situation. I had to let him go. I mean, business was bad. He didn't understand that. And, I mean, he had his views and I respected that. And I basically kissed goodbye a loan of $8,500. Right now, it was a tangled thing, but it was a clear-cut loan. You know what concerned me? What concerned me was that that was between me and God. We're on the way. We're being judged. And I thought, oh, no. I didn't care about the... I mean, I did. But I didn't. My purpose was to get to the point where I could shake this man's hand again. A man, he did not even look me in the face, and I had to look up every sermon. The minister got the idea, and boy, it seemed it came close to the bone. It seemed really close that we knew what he was talking about. But that was my goal. Eventually, you see, I'd send this guy, he's about 1,000 kilometres away, and I'd send him through someone else some wine every year at the feast, and good wine, and then I sent him a whole box one year. Because it was between me and God, my Creator, I had to prove to my Father that I had nothing against this person in there. That's what I had to do. Okay, he wouldn't look at me, you know, we don't have a fantastic friendship. I can't turn around and say, hey, I have produced not only 100%, not one more talent with this guy. I mean, I've produced 200%. Our friendship is better than ever. I can't say that. But I can say, hey, I got you a little bit of usury. I did a little bit. I went as far as I could. It's a matter of attitude. And it's a matter of understanding that it's between us and our Creator. You know, so when we boil it down, what is it? What is it? It's a difference between what? Carnality, being carnal-minded, and being what? Spiritually minded. It's that easy. Or do we think it's that easy? It's hard. Gaining salvation is hard. It's not easy. We've got to really put forth some effort. Let's have a look at Proverbs 17:10. This is a very interesting proverb. I'm just going to paraphrase it here for time. And it says that a rebuke goes deeper into a man of understanding than 100 lashes on the back of a fool. You know, what do we need? Do we need the big fanfare to get us? It won't give us the point. It won't put the point across. And God prophesies, and what he's given us is a heart of what? Of flesh, not a heart, not a dead heart of stone. That's Ezekiel 11, 19 to 20. So we have got a heart of flesh. Do we realize that? Or do we think with the heart of stone? Now, how does God speak to the heart of stone? This is really interesting, how God speaks to the heart of stone and how he speaks to the heart of flesh. Let's take a look at Exodus 19:16, how God speaks to the heart of flesh. And it came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunders, lightnings, and a thick cloud upon the mountain. And the sound of the trumpet was exceedingly loud, so that all the people in the camp trembled. That's speaking to the heart of stone. Going on to over the page to verse 18. The end result was, and all the people saw the thunderings and the lightnings and the sound of the trumpet and the mountain, a whole mountain smoking. I mean, we saw that tsunami come over Japan. It just took over the land. Can you imagine a whole mountain shaking with thunder, lightning? I mean, this is the way he speaks to flesh and gets the point across. Either directly in Mount Sinai there, or indirectly when we see these disasters, does he not? So the end result, they said to Moses, they trembled and stood afar off, and they said to Moses, "You speak with us, and we will hear, but let not God speak to us, lest we die." They thought they were going to die. Now, remember that. They thought they were finished when they heard God speak. Because there's a little bit of a difference when the foot, when the foot is in the other shoe, when the shoe's on the other foot. Now, how does God speak? Let's go to John 13, 34 to 35. John 13. How does God speak to those with a heart of flesh? So that's verse 34. John 13, verse 34. A new commandment I give you. Isn't this a reference also to when he spoke to the heart of stone? It's a direct reference. This is number, an extra. I don't want to say number 13, but it's an extra one, right? And a new commandment I give you, that you love one another. How? In the same way. Can we imagine that? Can you ever get it right? In the same way that I have loved you. That is how. What an emphasis. He comes back and tells you again, that's how. That's a double emphasis there. That is how you are to love one another. And by this, how do we know the true church of God? How do we know? Look at what he says. This is what the boss says. He says, by this everyone know that you are my disciples, if, third time, you love one another. Okay, so that's the way he speaks to the heart of flesh, or those with the spirit. Now let's have a look at Proverbs 17:1 to help you. That's page 783 for the later edition. Proverbs 17:1. There's a point here. Did I get that right? Yes, I did. 783, better is a dry piece of bread, a dry morsel. There's a principle here, and quietness with it, than a house full of sacrifice and fighting. You know, Christ did say to Peter three times, feed my lambs, feed my sheep, feed my lambs. He's talking about spiritual food. Now, this is a principle here of physical food. We take it and superimpose it on with a spiritual principle, and we get the idea that peace and quiet. I mean, this is the way he speaks to those with a heart of flesh. Peace and quiet, a rebuke, right? Peace and quiet, not lightning, thunder, fanfare. It's peace and quiet. It's a difference. You don't need the whipping on the back. You got to listen. If you got ears to hear what I'm telling you. So there's a difference on how he speaks to the heart of flesh. Now, since we are of the heart of flesh, I want to just highlight a few things about this new commandment. So if we're going to go back to... Well, the first thing is, think about this. At Sinai, what happened? The people feared death. They said, you speak to him of God, he's going to consume us. You speak to us. Didn't he? But what happens with the new commandment? Whose head was on the chopper? It was God himself. It was the one, you know, things are reversed, right? And things are there quiet. No fanfare, no big thunder, no smoking mountain. So things are a little different now. And that's the first thing I point out. The second thing, if we look at Luke 22:24, 104:9, we've got the what I would call the Muhammad Ali principle. Anybody know Muhammad Ali? The ex-world champion. What did he always say? Boxer. I am the greatest. And you know, this is the I am the great, and it always happened. We know it always happened. So chapter 22, verse 22. Then they began to question this amongst themselves, which of them it might be who was about, 24. And there was also an argument amongst them, even this, which of them should be considered the greatest. Now, they're his close companions, his dear friends, who he's taught for 3.5 years. And he was about to be butchered badly, ripped to pieces. They weren't concerned about him. They were, you know, they were concerned about the Muhammad Ali principle. Who's going to be the greatest? How does that affect God? Think about it. The shoe's on the other foot. These are the words of quiet, not the lashes. This is the difference between Sinai. Words spoken in quiet is what we need to listen to if we have a heart, a flesh, a living heart, a spiritual heart. So we move on to another point in this comparison. John 13, 45. So that's pretty... That's 1071, page 1071, John 13, 4-5. Here's my next point. Now, Christ rose from supper. He's about to be butchered, remember this. He knew of this competition business. So he laid it as his last message. This is in comparison to the fanfare, to the smoking mountain, to the tsunami, to the tornado. Comparison. Words quiet, in quiet. And he laid aside his garments after the, and taking a towel, he secured it round himself. His garment was so good that they didn't tear it apart, right, to separate it. So I don't know whether he had the equivalent of a singlet on. You know, did he wrap the tail around underwear? I don't know. He laid it aside. And he, pretty humble. Can you imagine Jesus Christ laying aside his garment, being probably bare-chested? Think about it. And saying, give me your foot. No. Peter said, no, I'm not going to do this. It was pretty natural. Well, no, give it to me. Give it to me. I'm doing something here. So what was he doing? Next, he poured water into a washing basin and began to wash the disciples' feet and to wipe them with a towel which he had secured. And you know, whose feet did he wash? Was the betrayer amongst them? Did he wash his feet? You know, I don't know who gets... with the internet, you see these unusual things. But I got a film, they even show it on TV, stuff taken by the phone, if I can put that way, where there was a stoning of a young 14, 15-year-old girl. And you had these men all around her stoning her for she didn't want to submit or whatever. And during the frenzy, one of them kicked, because, you know, you can imagine she was wreathing, they're all around throwing stones at her. And it kicked her garment aside, and you could see her legs and her underwear for a cheap thrill for these guys. We call them people, they were butchers. And then you can see a massive rock, like a great big brick, held up in the air, and wham, comes down on her head. Not enough, one more, wham. And as you can see, the blood slowly ooze onto the ground and her body begin to go limp, and she departed from this world in such a cruel manner. Think about this lovely little girl, this lovely person in the resurrection. Imagine her feelings washing the feet of those who murdered her. She may well be called to do that. What would she be thinking? What would she be feeling? Jesus Christ had our nature. Think about it. This guy here is orchestrating my death. And probably what was in Judas's mind was, I'll show you, because, you know, there was that expensive ointment that Christ was anointed with, and it was Judas, right, who turned around and said, hey, hang on, we could make a few bucks on this. You know, I mean, that could have been a good commission. Who knows? The equivalent of $1,000, $500. It was an expensive ointment. So what was his thoughts? And Jesus Christ could read his thoughts as he was washing his feet. Could it have been something like, okay, you got mad at me and praised that woman for that ointment for $1,000. I'm going to get $100,000 on you. Satan was in him. Who knows his thoughts? Yet Christ washed his feet. So we've got a mandate. And that's, if we go over to verses 14 and 15, just over the page there. What does Christ say? What's the meaning of the example? The meaning of the example is, therefore, verse 14, if I, the Lord and the teacher, have washed your feet, you are duty bound to wash one another's feet. For I have given you what? An example. I've given you an example to show that you should do exactly as I have done to you. So, you know what? These things are all done in quiet. This commandment is all done in quiet. No, you know, they weren't thinking about, he's going to kill me, I'm going to die. He was going to die, right? Big comparison. There's a big comparison. Now, does the example thunder? No, it doesn't. Yes, it does. It does. How does it thunder? Inside the heart of flesh. It's the example. It's the quiet words. Before they got the 100 lashes, they still didn't get it. We have got this example to get along with one another. Are we going to be there in God's kingdom if we don't get along? Are we going to be there? That's our example. So that example thunders, not loud outside, but loud inside. So I want to talk about that example. Looking at, I'm just going to go through, tell you the scripture, Deuteronomy 6:8, it says that about the law of God, it's going to be, I'll read it, the commandments shall be as frontlets between your eyes, between your eyes. And I've had a fair dealing with my friends, I have a lot of friends, Jewish friends that I catered for. And you know what they did to fulfill that commandment? They had a little box, and in that little box is written the commandments. And there's two strings tied to it. And guess what happens? Where does it go when they pray? Put it on their forehead, right, the frontlets, and they tie it up with a hat, right, or the yarmulke, and that's it. It's there. I've obeyed. Do we do something like the heart of stone? Do we do something like that? I mean, is that a once a year, right, I'll wash anyone's feet, don't matter if they're dirty? Or is it the message that has got to thunder inside of us? Will we say every week? Every day? That's pretty good. Peter said seven times. Seven times a day. Wow, look at that. Seven times a day. No, Christ said 70 times seven. Is that our attitude? 70 times seven. Is that the point of what? The true spiritual point for the heart of flesh, for the living heart that's got life flowing through it. It looks like that is the message for us today. So my point is, if we're offended with someone, all right, we all talk about Matthew 18. If we're mad at someone, what happens? Well, we say, I am offended. I'm mad. Good. you got to get mad, you got to get offended, because Christ said that offences will come. But what do we do with it? You got to cool down. You know your duty. You can't hang on to it. So do we just hang on to it, is the question, like the heart of stone? Or do we what? Do we roll our sleeves off? Do we humble ourselves and take our jacket or top, whatever, put a towel around us and spiritually wash the person who is offended's feet? Or even if we are offended. You know, I turn around, sorry ladies, paraphrasing the Apostle Paul. I mean, I look, $8,500. I guess $8,500. It's no big deal. But that's dung, right? What is of value is what I have done before the Father. I had to show I've got no ill will to this person. But you got to get mad, but you've got to get over it. You've got to roll your sleeve up. So the problem lies in pride and offence. If we look at Psalm 119, 165, that's page 763, that's a good scripture to keep in mind. It's a key scripture, key message. Psalm 119, 165, 119, 165, verse 165. In my Bible, it's page 763. Now, what does it say? It says, verse 165, great peace have they who love your law, and there is no stumbling block for them. The King James Version says nothing will offend them. You know, if you turn around and say, I am offended, and you hang on to it, you don't love God's law. You've made a stumbling block for yourself. I don't think I've got time for an example in 2 Kings, but that is a real beauty. Actually, I might just go through it. Page 477, 2 Kings. I really like this one because I like drama. This is dramatic and it's a lot of fun. Now, page 477, verse 1, chapter 5, verse 1. Now Naaman, commander of the army of the king of Syria, was a great and exalted man with his master because the Lord had given him deliverance to Syria by him. He was also a mighty man, but a leper. He was a leper. Now, what kind of a guy? I mean, I like to get myself in sync here and imagine, give me 3D, what does this translate into? It my version may not be yours, but we can't say a great person today. We can't say, for example, Mr. Schwarzenegger, because to honour, he has said, hasta la vista. And I don't know whether anybody knows what he said to Hollywood, but just in case you're wondering, he said, I'll be back. But let's take someone like Donald Trump. You know, proud man, hairdo, very successful. You know, someone who's going to go for presidency, all right? So he was a proud man. And verse 2, and the Syrians had gone out by companies and captured a young girl out of the land of Israel, and she waited on Naaman's wife. Look at the connections here. And she said to her mistress, I wish my lord were with the prophet in Samaria, for he would heal him of his leprosy. And when Naaman came in, he told his lord. When Naaman came in, he told his lord, saying, thus and so said the girl from the land of Israel. Bread in quiet. Okay? A rebuke. This is not lashes. This is not thunder. Pick up the thread. Okay? It was a little girl was the messenger. And the king of Syria said, go now, and I will send a letter to the king of Israel. And he departed and took him with him 10 talents of big fanfare. Big, I mean, he's a big man. He's important. 10 talents of silver and 6,000 shekels of gold and 10 changes of clothing. Boy, clothing must have been valuable, eh? And he came in with the letter to the king of Israel, saying, and now when this letter has come to you, behold, I have sent Naaman my servant to you, and you shall heal him of his leprosy. Well, as it goes on, he chucked a fit. How am I going to heal him? Was he in touch with a representative of God? Well, it doesn't look like he was. But anyway, so what happened was that he sent him over to the prophet's house. And verse 9, Naaman came with his horses and with his chariot and stood at the door of the house of Elisha. Now, here's the small voice. Don't miss it. Don't miss it. This is the word in quiet. This is the rebuke. This is not the lashes. This is not the thundering mountain. This is the words in quiet. Look at this. Then Elisha sent a messenger. He sent him a messenger. He sent him a messenger boy. Can you imagine? He's a great leader. I need to be respected. No. You get a messenger, pal. And he says, go and wash in the Jordan 7 times. This guy's really proud. That's the point. And your flesh shall be restored to you, and you shall be clean. Sent by a messenger. Well, Naaman was angry. Well, Mr. Trump really blew his top here. And he went away. And he said, behold, I said within myself, he will surely come out to me and stand and call out in the name of the Lord his God and strike out his hand. I wanted to see fanfare. I want to see this guy come out with all his clothing, with a fantastic presence, because I'm a great man. He sends me his messenger. His messenger. Who do you think I am? And so he carried on. And up Abana and Parfar, rivers of Damascus, better than all the waters of Israel. May I not wash in them and be clean? Ha! And he turned and went away in a great rage. Not a little rage. He blew his top. Okay. Well, you know, they came to him and my father. They knew how to deal with him, didn't he, the people? That they said, oh, my father, if he'd asked you to do something great, if he'd asked you to do something phenomenal, wouldn't you have done it? But he just said, go and wash in the Jordan. You got out of it easy. Go and wash. Do it. So he did. Can you imagine every time? Seven times. First time, went in, washed, got out. In again. Well, this is an idiot thing to do. Back again. How many times do the things that God tells us to do these things, how many times does it seem like they're idiot stuff? How many times? This is stupid. Oh, well. In again. Second time. Third time. You know, he did it. And by the time he finished, right, his skin was clear like that of a little boy. That's verse 14. And he was clean. And he returned to the man of God and he was and all his company, and he came and stood before him, and he said, look at the difference. Where's the pompous attitude now? Where's the grandeur now? And he said, behold, I now know that there is no God on all the earth but in Israel. Forget about our rivers. They stink. You know, Israel has got the true God. So accept now my present. And I've got a present. Thank you very, very much. It's what he said. He appreciated it so much because he then got rid of his pride. Okay? There is another example that I'll give you. This is the last example I'll give you because this is a New Testament example. Matthew 15, 22 to 28, page 976. For those of you with the second edition, I'll make it easy, since I made it easy on myself. So verse, we're looking at, verse 22. And behold, a Canaanite woman, Syrophoenician she was, Greek-born, who came from those borders, cried out to him, saying, "Have mercy on me, Lord, son of David. My daughter is grievously possessed by a demon. Help!" But he did not answer her a word, and his disciples came and requested of him, saying, "Send her away, for she's crying out behind us." You know what? She didn't stop. They said, "Look, he's not going to see you." "I don't care. I've got to see." "No, he's not going to. I want to see him. I have to see him." She wouldn't take no for an answer. But verse 24, he answered and said, "I have not." Now, then finally, he said, they came to him and they got Christ. And he said, "Well, look, verse 24, I've not been sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel." Then she came and worshipped him. She bowed down, right? Probably at his feet. And she said, "Lord, help! Help!" But he answered and said, "It's not proper to take the children's bread and to throw it to the dogs." Are you calling me a dog? Are you calling my... Who hates their children? Who hates their children? You can't hate your children. She loved her child. He called her child a dog. "And bread and throw it to the dogs." And she said, "Yes, Lord, but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table." I mean, she wasn't put off. Was she offended? No. She did a seven-time dunk in the river. She came out and she said, "No." Then Jesus answered and said to her, "O woman, great is your faith. As you have desired, so be it to you." And her daughter was healed that hour. You know, I think if we take the spirit of what's being said here, right, in some way through a trial, through a disagreement with someone. You know, there's people that have left the church. Are there fruit? Are there fruit being born? They are. You've leave the church. There are others that are told, "You got to go because your attitude's not right." Right? And there are those that say, "I'm offended with you. I can't stand you. I don't agree with you. You're a pompous so-and-so." You know, point is, With these disagreements, have you ever thought, is it Jesus Christ himself that is giving you a trial? And maybe he's called you, let me say, a proverbial, and it goes two ways, proverbial dog. Do you get offended? Do you think with the heart of stone? Do you think with the heart of flesh? Which heart do you think with? It's a direct message to each one of us. It's the message of the lesson of the foot washing. We keep it with us 70 times 7 every day. So the key word is the kingdom of God is going to last forever. If we don't learn to get along with one another, and indeed, the big deal is love one another as I loved you. I ask, you ask, are we going to be there if we don't learn that lesson? So the key word is get along, and there's a new commandment. Love everyone else as I have loved you. That's the way people are going to know you're mine. So we've got a choice today and every day. Is it pride an offence, or are we going to roll our sleeves up and wash? What's it to be? It's your choice. It's my choice. It's our choice. We're now going to take a short break and come back with Fred's message.